afternoon, Tri-States, and a happy St. Patrick's Day to you. This is Ken reading for IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. And we are reading from the Friday, March 17th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And now we have our piece from the top of page one. Joe Davies County woman charged with homicide. This comes from Benton, Wisconsin. Authorities in Lafayette County said a Joe Davies County, Illinois woman has been charged with homicide following an investigation into the death of her grandmother-in-law. Shannon C. Busson, 30, of rural Elizabeth, Illinois, was arrested Wednesday in Galena on a charge of first-degree intentional homicide in connection with the death of Lynn I. or L. Montgomery, 83, of Benton. Court documents provide more details into the investigation. Documents state that a Lafayette County Sheriff's Department deputy was called to a residence on Carr Factory Road in Benton at about 4 p.m. February 27th for a report of an unresponsive woman. The woman is identified in documents as victim, but was identified as Montgomery in a press release Thursday from the Sheriff's Department. Busson, who is married to one of Montgomery's grandsons, called 911 to report the incident, documents state. On the call, she said, "I'm calling to report an emergency. I'm at my grandma's house. She's fallen. I don't think she's breathing. She feels limp. She said she took a fall." Busson was at the residence when a deputy arrived and let him inside, documents state. The deputy found Montgomery face down in a bedroom between a wall and a bed. The deputy could not find a pulse on Montgomery, and she was taken to a Dubuque hospital where she was pronounced dead. On February 28th, members of Montgomery's family went to her residence to look for paperwork and contact information for extended family. There, they noted several things out of place, documents state, including a computer bag on Montgomery's bed instead of its usual place in a drawer. A notepad with what appeared to be Montgomery's handwriting also was found. The first page of the notepad had writing in blue ink stating, "Help, Shannon is hurting me," documents state. The third page of the notepad had writing in black ink. From what was readable, the writing appeared to read, "She dragged me from the basement to try and get my safe. She illegible. Help." Additionally, a safe Busson and her husband found in the garage February 27th after Montgomery was taken to the hospital was back in its typical location in a bedroom closet on February 28th, documents state. Law enforcement, who searched the residence February 28th, found drag marks and scratching abrasions in the living room and garage, documents state. The drag marks were consistent with the size of the safe. A search of Busson's phone found an email draft created at 5:14 a.m. February 28th with the correct combination to the safe, documents state. An autopsy was conducted on Montgomery on March 1st. Documents state that the preliminary autopsy report noted multiple blunt force injuries on Montgomery's head, face, and limbs, as well as rib fractures. The doctor who conducted the autopsy reported that Montgomery possibly was prevented from breathing, causing her death, and there were no findings that a medical event would have caused victim's death in any way. One of Montgomery's family members spoke with law enforcement March 1st and reported that an index card had fallen out of the computer bag found on Montgomery's bed. On one side of the card, it was typed about ancient astronomy and a handwritten note on the side, "Watch out for Shannon, help me," documents state. On the other side of the index card, there was what appeared to be older writing, and in the middle was a handwritten note in different ink. "Shannon, she knocked me down in the basement, dragged me upstairs, threw me down, tried to strangle me, and tried to open my safe. I don't know what she will do next." Bussin's husband was interviewed by authorities February 28th and said Bussin left their home at about noon February 27th with their children. The man said he knew Bussin was going to Montgomery's house to help go through items Montgomery wanted to sell, but was unaware of her exact whereabouts most of that day. Bussin's husband said he found it strange that the safe was in the garage and asked Bussin to take a photo of it while they were at Montgomery's house, documents state. He said he touched the safe to see how heavy it was, but did not see Bussin touch it. Bussin called her husband repeatedly during his interview with authorities, documents state. The detective interviewing Bussin's husband could hear Bussin talking on the phone in a manic state, documents state. Bussin could be heard saying phrases such as, "They're going to take me," "I don't want to go to prison," and "Why would Grandma say I hurt her?" Bussin was interviewed by authorities March 1 and 2. She said she left her home around noon February 27th and went to her mother's house in Hanover, Illinois, from about 12:20 to 2:45. However, traffic camera footage shows a vehicle consistent with Bussin's parked in front of a bank in Benton at 12:23 that day, documents state. The vehicle later can be seen driving on Main Street. At about 12:40 p.m., a vehicle consistent with Montgomery's can be seen traveling west on Main Street with the vehicle consistent with Bussin's distant following, documents state. A video taken on Bussin's phone at 12:53 p.m. February 27th was geotagged at Montgomery's resident, documents state. Records from Bussin's phone show she canceled a call to Montgomery's landline at about 12:23 p.m. Bussin missed a call from Montgomery at 12:46 and called her back a minute later. Bussin told authorities Montgomery had called her at about 1 p.m. while she was at her mother's house in Hanover and that Montgomery was kind of acting weird, documents state. She said she arrived at Montgomery's house at about 3:30 p.m. Bussin said she got no response knocking and got in through the unlocked front door, documents state. She found Montgomery in the bedroom but did not call 911 immediately due to poor cell service, documents state. Phone records show that Bussin tried calling her husband several times before having a FaceTime call with him at 3:58 p.m. Bussin called 911 at 4 p.m. Bussin told authorities her fingerprints would be on the safe because she tried to move it from the garage, documents state. She said she did not see the note saying she hurt Montgomery and didn't understand how it could be there. Bussin questioned if she was hurting victim. Why would she allow victim to hide notes, documents state. She continued, "If victim was in distress, how did she write the notes?" She wondered why victim would make those accusations. Bussin told authorities she told her husband she was going to prison. When asked why Shannon thought she was going to jail, prison, Shannon said, "Because I just immediately thought that, okay, now they found this note. They say it's me. Now I'm done. I'm done. Now there's a note. I'm the one who finds Grandma. How convenient. Now there's a note the next day. We touched the safe in the garage. Our next front page piece. City housing stock trending in right direction. City of Dubuque staff say the community's housing stock is going in the right direction, despite ongoing challenges with the housing assistance program. During a recent hearing on the budget for the fiscal year that begins July 1, Housing and Community Development Department staff provided details on the status of housing in the community and how city programs are making more housing units available and making them more affordable. I feel like we are at a point where we are hitting all the right spots, said Housing and Community Development Director Alexis Steger. We changed a lot of things, and those changes are being seen. Steger and Housing Department staff pointed to a number of positive changes seen in the city's housing market over the past year. Assistant Housing Director Mike Belmont noted the creation of 94 new affordable housing units in the city in 2022. Multiple housing projects also are expected to start construction this year, including the 390-unit Fox Hills Apartments set to be located at the northwest end of Plaza Drive and The Stacks, a 192-unit apartment complex planned in the Port of Dubuque. Both of these projects have been promised financial incentives from the city through tax increment financing. Deputy Code Official Ben Potoff said the city also has seen improvements in rental property inspections, with the inspection failure rate falling from 87% in 2018 to 70% in 2022, though the failure rate did tick up from 68% in 2021. People are showing up, and they are getting their inspections done, Potoff said. They are making an effort to pass. The city also has seen a decrease in properties managed by landlords given a priority designation, which is issued when a landlord accumulates 3 municipal infractions in 1 year. Priority landlords are subject to an accelerated housing inspection schedule. And Potoff said landlords under the designation have decreased the number of units they manage as a result. The 7 landlords under the designation used to collectively manage 823 properties. Now that number has dropped to 201. Potoff said the smaller number of properties maintained by those landlords has made it more possible for them to pass their housing inspections. We've had a couple property owners get on to that next step and are getting themselves moved out of that intensive inspection program, Potoff said. The city also has seen success with its first-time home buyers program, increasing from 13 participants in fiscal year 2022 to an estimated 20 participants in the current fiscal year. However, the city still is experiencing challenges with its Housing Choice Voucher program, which provides federal rental assistance to residents with low income or disabilities. While rental assistance currently is provided to 760 households per month, Assisted Housing Supervisor Gina Hodgson said an overall low vacancy rate for rental units and a low rate of landlords accepting housing vouchers continues to limit the number of residents the program can help. We're underutilizing our funds, she said. Steger said about 32.6% of landlords in the city are willing to accept housing choice vouchers, roughly equal to the previous year. In the current fiscal year, a total of 3,245 housing units are managed by landlords willing to accept housing choice vouchers. We are really not seeing any change at all in that number, Steger said. City Council member Susan Farber expressed frustration at the hearing over the low rate of landlords accepting housing choice vouchers and asked if anything could be done to increase the number willing to participate in the program. With the new housing coming abroad, is there some way we can boost the participation? Farber said. I'm surprised it's that low, to be honest. Steger said the city will follow a recommendation by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to reach out to landlords through other landlords that currently accept housing choice vouchers and share their successes with the program. The city must approve its budget for fiscal year 2024 by the end of April. And now we have our final front page piece with a large picture right in the middle of the front page with an older woman clearly dressed all out in Irish with all kinds of little Irish decorations in the background. And beneath the picture, the caption reads, "While Patricia Manders celebrates St. Patrick's Day, she will also celebrate her birthday today." And the article is, "The Pluck of the Irish." Patricia Manders has more than one reason to celebrate today. It's St. Patrick's Day, a day to celebrate her Irish heritage, and it's also her 87th birthday. "I love being Irish, and I love to celebrate," said the Dubuque native. "There's going to be 17 of us for lunch at the vault between family and friends, and we're also going to celebrate at my house on Saturday with my St. Anthony Sloppy Joes because I don't like corned beef." While corned beef and cabbage long has been associated with the Irish and St. Patrick's Day, it's actually an American tradition. Traditionally, Irish Catholics would celebrate St. Patrick's Day with a meal of ham and potatoes. But ham was expensive in America, and corned beef made from the tough meat of a brisket was a budget-friendly substitute. Even with Irish roots on both sides of her family, Manders said it wasn't until she had her own family that she was able to celebrate the way she wanted. "It was a big holiday when I had my own home," she said. "When we would have dinner, everything would be green except the meat. Green milk, green mashed potatoes, whatever I could make green. And being a hairdresser, I would always put a green curl in my daughter's hair." Manders is among local residents who will be spending today celebrating their Irish heritage. Jill Sweeney Ungs of Dubuque grew up in an Irish Catholic family and had the opportunity to visit the land of her ancestors a few years ago. "It's not as big a party holiday there as it is here," she said. "We couldn't find corned beef, and people we talked to said, 'Yeah, that's an American thing.'" During her visit, Ungs got the opportunity to visit Cork, the home of her Sweeney family, and Galway, the home of her O'Brien family. "My grandmother was an O'Brien," she said. "My dad, Joe, was 100% Irish. Even though my mother was German, everything was about being Irish and being proud to be Irish. We were in all the parades when they had them in Dubuque. Now we celebrate in Dyersville every year." Ungs said her family also makes sure to celebrate in August at Dubuque's Irish Hooli. Manders said when she was growing up, the feast day of St. Patrick was a bit more reverent. "It was more quiet," she said. "We would go to Mass, and it always included a big family meal." Americans once again can be credited for the revelry of St. Patrick's Day. In Ireland, the day traditionally has been a spiritual and religious feast day in honor of Ireland's patron saint. Until the 1970s, laws in Ireland prohibited pubs from being open on March 17th. But patriotism among Irish immigrants, many of whom unwillingly had to leave their beloved Ireland during the potato famine, began to rise. Irish Americans began to celebrate with parades and street parties. They founded Irish aid societies to help those less fortunate. One of those societies was the Ancient Order of Hibernians. Vicki Leonard of Dubuque is the president of the Ladies AOH St. Bridget Division 1 chapter, which has over 60 members. "We're an Irish Catholic group," Leonard said. "Our motto is friendship, unity, and Christian charity. We celebrate Irish heritage, Christianity, and giving back to the community. Leonard said the ladies AOH and the AOH Division 2, which is the men's chapter, headed up by her husband, Pat, is active year-round. We march in parades. We put on the Irish Hooli, which is held every August, she said. We donate to local charities and through our national charity. It's a fun group and a very generous group. Leonard, who identified more with her German roots until she discovered a great-great-grandfather named Patrick, who had come from Ireland, loves to celebrate the holiday with her family, particularly the annual setting of the leprechaun trap with her grandchildren. Every year, during St. Paddy's Week, he can show up at any time, she said. His name is Paddy, and he destroys Grandma's house. He puts up decorations. He turns pictures upside down. He pees green in the toilet. He does all kinds of goofy things. Mary Meyer, 99, of Dubuque, was born a Kretschmer and married a Meyer. Unfortunately, I have a German name, she said, but I'm one quarter German and three quarters Irish. O'Regan, O'Connor, O'Connell, my family tree is full of Irish names. Meyer remembers going to Mass every day as a child, including on St. Patrick's Day. My mother would make us breakfast, and while she was packing our lunches for school, we'd go to Mass, she said. I'm really proud of my Irish ancestry. They came to Iowa before Iowa was a state. The O'Regans settled near Key West, and they called it Ballycloe. Meyer carried her Irish traditions with her when she had her own family of nine children. We always celebrated St. Patrick's Day, she said. Whatever we had to eat that I could color green, I did. We always wore green. I made more of the holiday and of being Irish with my children. The passing on of traditions is something Leonard has done with her children and continues to do with her eight grandchildren. I think no matter what your background is, you want to pass those traditions on, she said. I think everybody feels that way about their heritage. Turning to our opinion page, I find that we have several letters to the editor for today's reading. Our first one, Galena Forum coverage shouldn't have included no-show candidate. Wendy Bade, West Wagner Road, Lena, Illinois. I read a TH article by Elizabeth Kelsey that covered the recent forum for candidates for Galena City Council, sponsored by the League of Women Voters. Although the article was well written, I must take exception with the fact that the article included comments from Bobby Hahn. Bobby was given the chance to participate in the event and chose not to. His choice, and it was his choice, resulted in his opponent not being able to participate in the forum, not her choice, other than to make her opening statement. Although the reporter did interview both Cynthia and Bobby, Cynthia was unable to participate fully in the forum because of Bobby's choice. Therefore, he should not have been given the stage, as it were, to speak in an article that was clearly geared toward the forum, an article that is titled Galena Council Candidates Discuss Key Issues at Forum. The League of Women Voters has very clear rules as it relates to the forum. If a candidate chose not to participate, their opponent could not participate either. Bobby had his chance, and he chose not to take it at his opponent's expense. He should not have been given another chance to be included by being interviewed after the fact and having his comments included in an article reflecting the events of the forum. And we have with this one an editor's note, which reads, typically, when the TH covers a candidate forum, only the candidates present would be quoted in the article. In this case, the forum served as background for an election preview story highlighting all the candidates in the race, so all were included. The headline should have labeled the story as a preview of the slate of candidates running rather than news coverage of the forum. Our second letter to the editor, climate change denial column off base, Andrew Auge, South Booth Street, Dubuque. In his recent double take column, Jim Gysi supports climate change denialism with faulty logic and misleading quotes. The fact that prior prognostications of environmental disaster were inaccurate has nothing to do with the scientific validity of anthropogenic climate change, nor do the comments of world leaders who suggest that the challenges of climate change might lead to greater global cooperation. What is left to support his argument are two quotes from scientific authorities who oppose the consensus that anthropogenic climate change is real. The extent of that consensus is considerable. A recent article, August 2019, from Nature Communications, a subsidiary publication of the esteemed journal Nature, cites a comprehensive study establishing that 97 to 98% of scientists believe that climate change is real and that the small percentage who don't have substantially lower levels of authority in this field. Neither of the anomalous authorities that Mr. Gysi quotes are credible. Richard Lindzen, a former professor of meteorology at MIT, has not published peer-reviewed articles on climate change and has received funding from groups associated with climate change denial, including the Koch-established Heartland Institute and Peabody Cole. Patrick Moore, mistakenly identified as Peter, is not a co-founder of Greenpeace. That organization has indicated that while Mr. Moore worked for it in the 1980s, he left it to become, quote, a paid representative of corporate polluters, end of quote. Such a shoddy and distorted argument doesn't deserve the prominence that the TH gave it. I'm going to pause here. I should have paused a little earlier. Anthropogenic, meaning essentially human mammal caused climate change, is what that meant in the article. Our third letter to the editor, set an example and don't litter. Mary Essman, Tanzanite Drive, Dubuque. After picking up a full bag of garbage on Tanzanite Drive over a recent weekend, I am wondering if littering is still illegal. I don't remember the last time I saw a sign against tossing cans, bottles, masks, candy wrappers, cigarette packs, or the Wendy's bag out the car window. Get a conscience, people, and set a good example. Please don't litter. I would concur with that. Having participated for many years through our church, twice a year we would clean up part of Northwest Arterial. Every year, twice a year, there'd be stuff out there. Yeah, I don't know. We do have to stop littering. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of today's opinion. You are all listening to Ken reading from today's March 17th, St. Patrick's Day edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And this is all brought to you in large measure, in fact, entirely, by IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. And now we will turn to today's obituaries. Lisa M. McDonald. Lisa M. McDonald, 55, of Dubuque, passed on Tuesday, March 14th, surrounded by her loving family at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics in Iowa City, after a courageous battle with myelitis dysplastic syndrome, a rare and incurable form of blood cancer. Visitation for Lisa will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 18th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Gary Owen, Iowa, where a massive Christian burial for Lisa will be held at 11 a.m., with Reverend Mark Osterhaus presiding and Assisting Deacon Ray Noonan. Burial will follow in St. Patrick's Cemetery. The Reif Funeral Home in Piasta is assisting the family with arrangements. She was born January 26, 1968, in Dubuque, daughter of Charles and Mary Lou Richard Puccio. She was a graduate of Wallard High School in Dubuque. She continued her education by obtaining an Associate of Arts degree from Northeast Iowa Community College, a Bachelor of Arts degree from Loras College, and a Master of Arts and a Master of Science degree from Kaplan University. She was very proud of her academic accomplishments, but it's what she did with her education that fulfilled her. She thrived as a special education teacher for 13 years in the Dubuque and Iowa City Community School Districts. She worked tirelessly for all her students with special needs, as each one held a precious place in her heart. After teaching, she transitioned to assisting adults with disabilities as a case manager social worker at ARC. Lisa always felt drawn to helping others in need and would put the needs of others before her own. Her other passion was her family. Lisa found her person and married Patrick Leroy McDonald May 14, 2004, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Gary Owen. They were a team in every sense of the word, from raising three daughters together to tackling home decor projects that Lisa found on Pinterest, to experimenting with new recipes in the kitchen and having sleepovers with Charlie and Annabelle. Nana Lisa treasured every minute with them, as well as cherished sister days with Beth and the special lunches with Mom and Dad. In lieu of flowers, a Lisa M. McDonald Memorial Fund has been established. A video tribute may be viewed and online condolences may be given to the family at www.reiffuneralhomeinc.com. Joseph Berlage, Worthington. Joseph R. Berlage, 80, of Worthington, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, March 14th at Mercy One, Dubuque, Iowa. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. on Sunday, March 19th at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville, where a military service will be accorded at 7 p.m. by American Legion Post 137. Visitation will continue at Kramer Funeral Home from 9 to 10 a.m. prior to funeral mass. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, March 20th at St. Paul Catholic Church in Worthington, with burial in the church cemetery, where military honors will be accorded by American Legion Post 137. Reverend Chris Podhoski will officiate. Joseph was born March 8, 1943, in Manchester, the son of Elmer and Dorothy Urbane Berlage. He married Helen Lynch September 2, 1967, in Cascade. Joe grew up in Worthington, working on the farm and graduating from St. Paul Schools. He and Helen began farming down the road from where he grew up in 1967. While raising their three children, they enjoyed snowmobiling, bowling, golfing, playing cards, and coaching Little League teams in Worthington. He worked long hours on the farm while being a devoted husband, father, grandfather, and friend. In his later years, he rarely missed a sporting event and shared many skills and knowledge with his children and 11 grandchildren. Joe enjoyed morning coffee and cards with friends and family. Joe will be missed by many and remembered for his optimism and positive demeanor. Joe was a member of the American Legion Post 137, Dubuque County Cattlemen Association, and St. Paul's Catholic Church. He was a faithful man and supporter of Catholic education. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family in care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Roger Stoddard, Savannah. Roger Stoddard, 30, of Savannah, died Saturday, March 11th. A memorial gathering will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 25th at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah, where services will follow. Gerald Nagel, Galena. Gerald Nagel, 87, of Galena, died Sunday, March 12th. Arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena is assisting the family. David A. Beckius, East Dubuque. David A. Beckius, 87, of East Dubuque, adoring husband, steadfast father, and loving grandfather, passed away March 12th at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Saturday, March 18th at St. Raphael Cathedral. A massive Christian burial will be held at 12 p.m. with Father Dennis Quint officiating. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque, Iowa, is assisting the family. Online condolences may be left at www.leonardfuneralhome.com. David was born October 17, 1935, in Dubuque, as the son of Leonard Beckius and Rose Beckius Nee Link. He served in the USNR from 1956 to 1959, primarily stationed on the USS Bushnell, AS-15. He married Elizabeth R. Schrod, October 14, 1961, at St. Francis Xavier Church, Dyersville. David worked several years at the Dubuque Packing Company and then at John Deere Dubuque Works for 39 years until his retirement. While working at Deere, he earned his BA in business from Loras College. David was a DIY, do-it-yourself, enthusiast and loved the outdoors, fishing, hunting, camping, and biking. He spent the past 15 years doting on his beloved grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorials in David's name may be directed to Disabled American Veterans, St. Joseph Indian School, or St. Labre Indian School. Barbara G. Anderson, McNabb, Illinois. Barbara Gail Wagenfer Anderson, 74, of East Dubuque, Illinois, passed away Sunday, March 12th in McNabb. A celebration of her life will be held at a later date in East Dubuque. Cremation rites have been accorded. Dysart Kofoy Funeral Chapel will be assisting the family with the arrangements. She was born March 1st, 1949, in Centralia, Washington, to Graham and Daisy Fracas Wagenfer. Barbara was a self-employed truck driver and operator. She was a member of the Red Hat Society. She was also a past member of the East Dubuque City Council. Gardening and caring for plants were two of her favorite pastimes. She also was an avid NASCAR fan. Online condolences may be made to her family at www.dcfunerals.com. Dennis R. Pickle. Dennis R. Denny Pickle, 76, of Dubuque, died Saturday, March 11th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, March 27th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque, Illinois, is assisting the family. With our passings, we must remember that we often have new arrivals, and today we have quite a few. We'll start with Monday, March 13th. Sharp Sager, Drew Sharp and Caitlin Sager of Bellevue, a girl at Unity Point Health, Findlay Hospital, Dubuque. Tuesday, March 14th. Healy Trottier Arnold, Austin Healy and Alexandra Trottier Arnold of Dubuque, a girl at Findlay. Wednesday, March 15th, Montgomery Saugerling, Dalton Montgomery and Kaylee Saugerling of Dubuque, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Ehlers, Connor and Mary Ehlers of Makokara, a girl at Finley. And finally, Gort. Christopher and Shelby Gort of Shellsburg, a girl at Finley. Welcome aboard, little ones. May life bring you blessings. Well, on this page, we do have a couple of area news and brief pieces I'll share with you. Almost home to hold St. Patrick's Day fundraiser. A Dubuque homeless shelter for men with children will hold a St. Patrick's Day fundraiser this weekend. The event starts at 6 p.m. Saturday, March 18th at Gary Dolphin's Iron Bar. An online announcement states, the fundraiser will feature live music by local Irish band Ballyhegu. I'm sorry for the pronunciation. Almost Home reopened its doors in the fall as Dubuque's first shelter specifically for men with children, one of a handful of shelters nationwide to cater specifically to that demographic. And our second piece, police, one hurt in two-vehicle crash in Dubuque. Police said one person was injured in a two-vehicle crash Wednesday in Dubuque. Darian L. McKenzie, 28, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment of her injuries, according to Dubuque police. Police said McKenzie was a passenger in a vehicle driven by Garrett J. Gross, 35, of Dubuque, west on Asbury Road at 8:23 p.m. Gross attempted to turn south onto Holiday Drive with a flashing yellow light. A vehicle driven by Alida G. Duggan, 65, of Dubuque, was traveling east on Asbury and had a green light. Police said Gross failed to yield the right-of-way while turning, and his vehicle collided with Duggan's. Gross was cited with failure to respond to a flashing yellow caution signal. Those are confusing sometimes. Now we'll continue with more of our area and Tri-State Area News. And at the top of the Dubuque and Tri-State page, we have Manchester Park Project back on track. From Manchester. After several productive conversations with the contractor and two agencies facilitating the project's funding, the Shelley Park Restoration Project in Manchester once again is continuing as planned. Previously, the council was informed that specific language required by the federal government when using certain grants was absent from the project contract, leaving the park restoration in jeopardy. The City of Manchester had received a $342,062 Community Development Block Grant and without it likely would not have used the project, which includes the addition of a new Americans with Disabilities Act compliant sidewalk, the replacement of crumbling retaining walls, and new seating near the amphitheater. However, City Manager Tim Vick delivered good news this week, relaying that Iowa Economic Development Authority was receptive to the city's plan to include addendums to the contract in order to get the federal language included. Now that the project is back on track, the city is still will be up against the grant's tight timeline, which requires 80% of the project's cost to be expended by May 29th. Tentatively, Vic said city staff have a pre-construction meeting with all the major players Tuesday, March 21st, and could have the final contract in front of the council at its next meeting. Theoretically, the contractor could start as soon as April 3, Vic said. That is provided that we have the contract back to the council and have everything signed by March 27th. The hope is to have the majority of the work done prior to June for the start of River Days. Vic said he also was informed that unlike what was previously conveyed, the city does not need to have 100% of the contract paid out by July 23rd. Instead, that doesn't need to occur until July 2024. When it comes to municipal projects, especially ones funded with grants, the project typically isn't closed for months or even years after the physical aspects is finished. This gives the city time to ensure things were done correctly before releasing retainers. It also appears that Shelley Park's iconic gazebo will be saved, as several parties have reached out to Vic with an interest in relocating the structure within the park. And we have another piece. Police: Clayton County man charged with arson for Dubuque garage fire. Police said a Clayton County man set fire to the garage at the rear of a Dubuque residence in February, causing $2,500 damage. Shane A. Howard, 39, of Volga, was arrested at 12:25 p.m. Wednesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging second-degree arson. Court documents state that Dubuque Fire and Police Departments responded to a garage fire at 10:32 p.m. on February 28th in the rear of 2024 Jackson Street. Firefighters extinguished the fire. Investigators reviewed private surveillance and City of Dubuque traffic camera footage and watched a vehicle drive into the alley and stop near the garage. Footage shows a subject exit the vehicle, approach the garage, then re-enter the vehicle and drive away as the fire begins in the garage, documents state. Authorities in Clayton and Fayette counties helped local law enforcement identify the vehicle as being associated with Howard, though he is not the registered owner, documents state. Clayton County Sheriff's Department deputies located the vehicle on March 1st in Volga. Iowa District Associate Judge Robert Richter issued an arrest warrant for Howard on March 1st. And we have our news in brief now. Man sentenced to probation for unauthorized charges on credit card. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for making unauthorized charges on a work credit card while employed at a Dubuque cemetery. Jeffrey S. Parr, 64, was recently given a deferred judgment in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of unauthorized use of a credit card under $1,500. With a deferred judgment, if probation and payment obligations are successfully completed, the record of the case is expunged. Parr was initially charged with unauthorized use of a credit card over $1,500 and under $10,000, but pleaded to the lesser included charge. Iowa District Associate Judge Mark Hostager ordered the sentence. Court documents state that police responded to Linwood Cemetery, 2736 Windsor Avenue, on November 4th, after receiving a report of unauthorized use of a credit card by an employee. Another employee reported that Parr, who then worked for the cemetery but no longer is employed there, was given access to a work credit card with a limit of $1,500, documents state. Cemetery employees determined that Parr made personal transactions totaling $1,990 from March 2021 to September 2022. Employees had a meeting with Parr on October 13th, and Parr admitted to the personal transactions, documents state. Parr did make payments back to the cemetery, totaling $1,989.88, but the Cemetery Association still wanted Parr criminally charged, documents state. Three locations in Dubuque. Our next article, shredding recycling options offered. Three locations in Dubuque and Asbury soon will allow area residents to shred and recycle unwanted documents. Dubuque Metropolitan Area Waste Agency is offering the shredding program in partnership with the City of Dubuque Public Works Department, Carnegie Stout Public Library, and the Asbury branch of the Dubuque County Library District. The program will run from Monday, March 20th through April 3rd. Shredded paper should not be placed in curbside or drop-off recycling containers because the material will contaminate the other commingling recycle streams, metals and plastics, states a DMASWA press release. This source separated shredding program offers an environmentally safe and secure option. Three locations will be available to drop off unwanted documents to be shredded and recycled. City of Dubuque Public Works Department, 925 Kerper Court. Drop-off hours will be from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Carnegie Stout Public Library, 360 West 11th Street. Drop-off hours will be 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, and Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. Sunday. And we have Asbury Branch of the Dubuque County Library District, 5290 Grand Meadow Drive. Drop-off hours, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. More information on the shredding program, you can call 563-557-8220. 563-557-8220. Our next news and brief, police. Man cut another with machete. Police said a man cut another man with a machete in December in Dubuque. Jonathan Luna, 27, of 9442 Noonan Street, number 308, was arrested at 11:35 p.m. Wednesday at his residence on a warrant charging assault while displaying a weapon. Court documents state that Luna used a machete with a blade longer than 5 inches to cut Gerald Rundy III, 29, no permanent address, December 28th during a dispute at Luna's residence. Luna had armed himself with a machete and threatened Rundy to make him leave the residence, documents state. Rundy was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital to receive several stitches to treat an injury to his arm. And one more, church plans free food distribution. A Dubuque church plans a free drive-through food distribution later this month. Holy Trinity Lutheran Church will host the distribution at 9 a.m. March 25th at the church, 1755 Delhi, according to an online announcement by the church. Participants should arrive at or after 8:30 a.m. and remain in their vehicles. Volunteers will load boxed food into the vehicle's trunk. Food is provided by River Bend Food Bank. The distribution will last until supplies are gone. We have another tri-state piece on the next page over I missed. Authorities, driver led officers on chase in Dubuque. Authorities said a man who led law enforcement officers on a high-speed chase Tuesday in and around Dubuque told officers he swallowed meth and heroin during the incident. Corey M. Jones, 25, of 2214 Jackson, was arrested at 3:11 p.m. Wednesday at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center on a warrant charging eluding, driving while barred, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Jones also was issued numerous traffic citations. He also was arrested on a separate warrant charging domestic assault with injury in connection with an unrelated incident. Sheriff Joe Kennedy wrote in an email to the Telegraph Herald that Jones had been transported to the hospital following the chase as a precaution after Jones admitted to swallowing drugs. Court documents state that a deputy parked at Dubuque Shooting Society 10380 Iowa 3 observed a vehicle traveling north on the highway with no license plate at approximately 4:40 p.m. Tuesday. The deputy attempted to stop the vehicle, but it drove away at a high rate of speed, documents state. The vehicle continued onto West John Deere Road, driving in the opposite lane of travel and running a stop sign before turning onto Herber Road. Authorities later identified Jones as the driver. Jones continued to drive recklessly in the oncoming lanes of travel and almost hit several cars head-on, documents state. The vehicle turned onto Colta's Lane and ran a stop sign onto Mud Lake Road, continuing to drive on the wrong side of the road at high speeds and running stop signs, documents state. Jones then drove onto Sherrill Road and turned onto Highway 3, heading south toward Dubuque. Jones continued south on Iowa 3, driving into ongoing traffic before his vehicle left the road and continued traveling in a ditch. The vehicle then continued south on Iowa 3, running the red light at Iowa 3 and Northwest Arterial and continuing on to Central Avenue, reaching speeds of 95 miles per hour in a 50 mile per hour zone, documents state. The vehicle ran out of fuel in the area of 30th Street and Central Avenue and Jones was taken into custody at 28th and Jackson Streets, then transported to the hospital. Jones advised, during the pursuit, he swallowed 3 grams of meth and 1 gram of heroin, documents state. Oh, my goodness, my goodness. Well, on our lifestyle page, we have something appropriate for today. It's a little piece called Green Day, telling us bits and pieces about St. Patrick and St. Patrick's Day. So let's take a look at this. Who was St. Patrick? He might not be who you thought he was. His name wasn't Patrick. His name was Maughan Sukkot. Only later did he change his name to Patricius. He wasn't Irish. Sukkot was born in Britain to an aristocratic Roman family around 390 AD. He lived a life of comfort until he was 16 years old, when he was kidnapped and sold into slavery in Ireland. For 7 years, he tended sheep. Eventually, Sukkot escaped, found passage on a pirate ship back to Britain, and reunited with his family. In the meantime, however, he had found religion. He became ordained as a priest, moved back to Ireland, and devoted his life to converting the Irish from paganism to Christianity. He wasn't a saint. According to the Catholic Church, Patrick was never officially canonized, which means he's not a saint. He didn't drive the snakes out of Ireland. In fact, there never had been snakes in Ireland. Snakes are cold-blooded creatures and can't survive in a cold environment. Fossil records of Ireland showed no snakes at all, ever. Patrick baptized thousands of Irish people and helped drive the pagan Druids out of Ireland. Historians feel the Druids in that true story somehow got turned into snakes. How we celebrate St. Patrick's Day? Those pretty green shamrocks? According to Irish legend, Patrick used the 3-leafed shamrock to illustrate the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, to his listeners when he was first teaching them about Christianity. The shamrock is not to be confused with a 4-leaf clover. If it's got 4 leaves, then it's not the right plant. The color green. St. Patrick's color of choice wasn't green. It was a light shade of sky blue. Green didn't become a symbol of Ireland until the Irish Rebellion of 1798. British soldiers wore green, wore red, so the Irish wore green to stand out. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This has been Ken reading from the St. Patrick's Day, Friday, the 17th of March edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And I thank you all for listening, and have yourselves a wonderful St. Patrick's Day. And I'll be back next week.